Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 198 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of March 20th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is trained circus seal Dan Ryan.
I perform for fish.
Our 200th episode is almost here, so Dan and I are continuing our list journey by listing our favorite games by system. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. Two little bits of housekeeping before we jump into things. Thing number one, the trained circus seal, I was told to call you that by Matt Much.
He's not wrong.
Matt listens to our show, unlike Dan and I, who just do the show. And he sometimes like live tweets or live messages me as he's listening to the show. And apparently at some point you specifically said last week you are not a trained circus seal. No. So I was supposed to tell you that you were a trained circus seal.
No, I am. I try to deny my
your heritage.
My heritage and really the family business, Chris. Family business of being in fact trained circus seals. But I mean, cuz like there's a lot of shit that people don't know about what we go through. It's a dark industry.
There's a lot of untrained circus seals out there.
There's a lot, just like she's running for governor, the unqualified lesbian. There's a
Cynthia
lot
Cynthia Nixon.
Cynthia Nixon, right? She didn't get her paperwork in on time. She is an unqualified lesbian.
Exactly.
As opposed, if she were a qualified lesbian, apparently it'd be fine. We have a lot of untrained circus seals in the profession. Like, you think that there's a lot of darkness around the Barnum Circus? You have no idea. You have no idea. The shit I've seen.
Well, speaking of nonsensical rants, we got, let's see, I'm calling this, let me bring up my email again, I lost that window. I'm calling this Bill Watch 2018. Mm. We've got another message from another Bill.
Dan and I, it's a different Bill?
Well, I mean, it's a different name on the email address.
Oh,
it's a different
so
email
what?
Address.
I have like 15 email addresses.
That you do. But anyway, I'm counting it. Okay. I'm counting it as a different bill. So this bill is Bill Gresko. And Bill writes, I'm a little behind on my podcast, so I've only just gotten started on Stone Age Gamer 195. I was called out at the opening of the episode, not sure why though. I was fighting traffic at the time and wasn't paying a ton of attention till I heard my name, Bill.
You know Bill. Why we called you out, Bill. Don't play like you don't. Don't pretend.
You know what you did.
You know what you... And you should feel bad.
See, now, I was going to say he should feel good. We're proud. I was proud of him for it, well, honestly.
It's not that I wasn't proud, but it wasn't good.
I guess that really depends on your definition of good. I mean, you're the one with the dark circus seal past, so...
This is true. This is very, very true.
You're more qualified to comment on this than I am. But, Bill, I say, don't worry. You should be proud. Hold your head high, Bill. All Bills. All of them.
Not all.
Not all.
And the Bill who did the thing, you know who we're talking to.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. And you know what you did.
How dare you?
Naughty, naughty boy.
So, podcast. We do a podcast about video games.
This is a weird not just, show, Chris.
Not just about bills and circus seals. We also do a podcast about video games. And Chris, we've done 97 of them.
We have.
And at least.
You know what I did this week?
What did you do this week?
I beat two video games, Chris.
Holy crap on a pita. What did you beat?
Right? I beat the Shadow of the Colossus remake.
Okay.
Which, oh God, I mean, just a stunning game.
The best shadows I've ever seen in a video game.
Without question. It's perfect. It's perfect. It is finally, like, now having finished it and making your way up the final Colossus. Did you ever beat the original or the
PS3? I have not. No, like, I didn't. I never got it on PS3 because somebody, I don't remember who, somebody told me that it was like, it wasn't really all that improved over the PS2 one. Like, it looked prettier, but it still didn't really, still chugged a lot. And I was like,
yeah,
oh,
that
might have
been me because that's what it did.
It could have been. I don't know. So I didn't really spend the money on it. But now this one looks like it's right up my alley, but I don't have a PlayStation 4.
But
so.
You don't, do you know the ending of the game?
I don't. And I've done a pretty good job of avoiding that.
So I'm not going to spoil it for you, but damn, when that hits you again, like, oh man, it's a beautiful piece of storytelling. Like, very, very few words, just so incredibly well done. But we've talked plenty of Shadow of the Colossus. The other game I beat was one of the free PS Plus games called 99 Vitas. It is a PS4 and PlayStation Vita game. It's the 99 lives, but Spanish for life is Vita.
I thought it was like about somebody trying to sell 99 PlayStation Vitas.
No, it's a game that would never end. this is a co-op up to 4-player. It has local and online multiplayer beat 'em up.
Oh, nice.
And it was really fun. It was really stupid and didn't take all that long to beat, but it's made by a Brazilian team, so there were jokes in there that I know I didn't get, but I could see that they were jokes, but like there was some silly shit in there, like one of the enemies that comes out on screen as you're making your way to get to fight the boss and whatever are soccer hooligans, and I mean, like, players, but they're obviously hooligans. And, like, when you knock them down, because they have about, like, 2 to 3 life bars, depending on the color of the shirt that they're wearing. And when you knock them down the first time and you go through your combo and whatever, like, they fall on the ground and, like, hold their knee. Like they're flopping in soccer, which is kind of funny.
You said that was Brazilian? Is that what you said?
I think it's Brazilian. Definitely, there's a South American influence all throughout the game.
That's awesome. Like, I feel like we never really heard a lot about games coming from that region for a long time. And, you know, I was just playing Dandara earlier this year and raving about that. And that's from a Brazilian team as well.
Yeah. It was very cool. Like I said, it's short. It was free this month. But I wouldn't have felt bad if I purchased it either. You know, like some of the bosses were pretty cool. The boss fights were kind of funny. Like the first boss you fight is this dude who works at a video store and, like, he rips off his Argentina soccer jersey and gets, like, all buff and shit. And then when you fight him again later in the game, his little text box pops up and it says, oh, this is one of those games where you fight the bosses again at the end, huh? And then, like, you go in and fight all the bosses again. You know, just, like, little cheeky shit like that. But it was a very cool game. And, like, easy enough to play to where Tiff and I played through most of it and then the girls came down. And, like, they just jumped on, and we played through that together. You know, it was a good time.
Nice. I didn't play a lot this week, really. I've been super busy this week. I've played another couple of levels of Kirby, which is a delight. I've played a lot more of the Pinball Arcade, which I believe still isn't back up on the Switch store yet, so I'm very lucky to have it. I've been playing the crap out of that. And that's pretty much it. I think I did a couple of levels of Spelunker Party last night. So in lieu of talking about what I've been playing, there was a little bit that showed up in the news that I thought was worth mentioning that, well, besides the whole Billy Mitchell thing, but I feel like that's a podcast for another podcast.
Oh, that guy.
He's got proof, right? He's going to bring some writing or something? I don't understand.
I'm so excited to watch where this goes.
I can't wait to find out.
I know that there are, like, kind of super important things happening, like, with our government, but the Billy Mitchell thing is also super intriguing and might
really is.
Be more important.
Kind of fascinating.
To our overall lives.
So, a new Castlevania game was announced. And in just the most Konami of moves, it is coming exclusively to iOS.
Right.
Which is, I mean, it's not a pachinko machine, so I guess it's kind of a step up. But similar to Metal Gear Survive, it's like they see that there's a market for Metal Gear games and Konami games, and they're like, well, all right, there's a market for this, so what don't they want? A mobile game. Then let's do that.
Let's do that. Konami is the best example currently of a video game company that could fall out of a boat and not hit any fucking water.
Really just astonishing. So
simply stunning. Simply
this is it's
stunning.
Called Castlevania Grimoire of Souls. It's a multiplayer like boss rush thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The screenshots look pretty nice. And it's got characters from all throughout Castlevania's history. It's got Simon Belmont from the original game, Alucard from Symphony of the Night and Dracula's Curse, Charlotte from Portrait of Ruin, Shanoa from Order of Ecclesia, and Maria Renard from Dracula X, and Soma Cruz from the Dawn of Sorrow and Aria of Sorrow.
Yeah.
Right? That's what those were, yeah.
Yeah.
I know they were both of sorrow. Something of sorrow.
They were
blank
both
of blank.
Really sad.
They were. But they were really good. So I don't know. It looks kind of cool. Dan and I were just talking right before the show. I'm kind of baffled. This is a... All right, we're going to make a portable... we're going to make a portable multiplayer Castlevania. Let's go with mobile phones and not Switch.
Or Vita, or 3DS, or literally anything else.
I mean, granted, like...
I mean, this too.
Yeah.
Like, this plus the other ones makes, I don't know, very weird.
Very, very weird. This is a... I mean, granted, this the Switch seems to be ripe for upscaling mobile ports, which have worked well and not so well, so... Maybe this will get ported to other things eventually. I don't know how well that other Castlevania game where they put a bunch of characters together, the one that was on like Xbox Live and PlayStation Network on the PS3 era.
Yeah.
The heck was that one called?
I don't remember. I didn't play very much of it. I didn't care for it.
Yeah, it had like a couple of neat tricks, but it didn't grab me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I really hope that Bloodstained is good. Let's put it that way.
It better be.
It looks good. I mean, I think it's off to a good start. But anyways, so that's the house cleaning. That's done. Let's get to work, shall we?
Let's do it.
So what we're working on here is clearly a bad idea because we're going to be here all night. We're going to try our best not to be. We wanted to talk about our favorite games ever. Like just do a simple list of that, but then Dan thought that it would be more interesting if we broke it down instead by naming our favorite games for a litany of different game systems, and I agreed that it would be more interesting.
Certainly bringing the Stone Age back into the Stone Age gamer. I do want to throw one caveat onto what you said, though.
Okay.
Yes, these are my favorite games on these systems. At the time that I wrote the list, because there is some flexibility in here.
There definitely is.
Right?
I mean,
make it like your definitive favorite of something is. We're not five. You know, like we can understand that there's subtlety in the world and your taste change as you go through whatever. And your favorite game on the system might be a game that you've never played yet.
Very true.
So, you know, at the time of this writing and recording, these are our favorite game that we could think of.
We took basically exactly. We took a look at what we would consider the biggest systems, like the most, I guess, the biggest systems from our perspective, dating from the original Atari 2600 up to the Nintendo 64. Like, there's not really. We're not going to name our favorite Odyssey game like it's
right.
Pong.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's not like there was a great litany of Channel F games to choose from. So we just wanted to kind of stick with things that we knew that were big deals to us and kind of go at it that way. Because otherwise we'd be here for all eternity, which we're probably going to be anyway. Because we always are.
We always are.
You know what I realized? So we're planning our 200th episode, and we're going to have a couple of guests on for it. And I realized that when we were doing this show with like four or five people, mm-hmm. we were able to keep it relatively short.
Yeah.
But then it became just me and Dan. And for some reason, the two of us.
It's just a rambling buffet of fuckery, Chris.
Oh,
inside
jokes. We're going to make that BoffCast happen. Anyway, all right, so let's start off.
Let's jump in.
The first one here, we expanded the scope, which didn't actually matter in the end because all of our games are for Atari 2600, but we figured we'd expand the scope to the generation of the Atari 2600, all flavors of that Atari 2600, 7800, 5200, and ST games or whatever, the computer games.
Right.
Intellivision, ColecoVision, Odyssey 2, all that business.
That era.
Exactly. That era. I had an Atari 2600. I didn't have a Intellivision or ColecoVision until later, and honestly, their game libraries, in my eyes, just or an Odyssey 2 even, don't really stack up to the 2600 as far as just like the games that I like and the games that I go back to. So really for me, it was very easy to just pick a 2600 game, and I think that was the similar situation with Dan. So Dan,
yeah.
What is your favorite game from that era?
I think without a doubt, it is Pitfall. This one I am pretty confident in. I was going to go with Spider-Man because I did love that game. I did. It was a Spider-Man game, and it's fucking awesome.
It was a Spider-Man game.
It's terrible. But Pitfall is just so cool, right? Like, I've been, going back and looking through stuff and watching some videos of Pitfall, and it's still a cool game. And
it is.
What's, I think, really cool about Pitfall is to see some of the fingerprints that it put on other games. Like, one of the things when you're running through Pitfall, there are disappearing and reappearing holes and rivers, lakes for some reason. Like, oh, this, the pit of water just disappeared. Oh, fuck, it's back. just very weird. That's not how water works. But, I didn't realize until today, really, that Pitfall was my training for Metal Gear on the Nintendo with the disappearing fucking rooms. Which is kind of cool. It's got like this little fingerprint to it, and you can see some of the ideas that are a little bit more fully fleshed out in something like A Boy and His Blob, first implemented here in Pitfall. It's a simple game for anybody who doesn't know what Pitfall is. You basically run to the right and collect treasures. You can go back to the left, but you really shouldn't until much later. There's,
I guess that depends on your perspective.
No, you totally go right. You always go right. You don't go down because there's a long-tailed cat down there that's just going to fuck you up.
It may or may not actually be a scorpion.
It may or may not be a scorpion. But like all you do, you run, you jump over hazards, you jump on crocodile heads, you swing on some ropes, and you collect treasure. And that's the bulk of the game. But it had a very cool soundtrack. For the time, like very iconic music iconic sounds when you're swinging on the rope.
Yeah, there wasn't any music until Pitfall 2.
Yeah,
Pitfall 2, I would argue, is the superior game.
Probably the superior game, but that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about favorites.
And I played the hell out of this game and was never very good at it until I got older. It is a game.
Did you ever finish it?
I don't remember ever finishing it, honestly.
I definitely haven't finished it. I'm not good enough to actually finish getting all the treasures before the 15 minutes is up.
Yeah, I am.
I'd like to accomplish that someday, though.
Well, there is a pain in the ass-a-thon coming up, Chris.
There sure is.
And that sounds like a pain in the ass if I've ever heard one, because this game can be a pain in the ass. It is... It does reward memorization, as a lot of very early video games did, memorization and timing. There are certain instances of cheap damage where you don't take damage as Pitfall Harry. You lose points when you get hit.
Exactly. And the points are actually your time.
Right. So
Yeah,
I mean, there are instances where you cross into the next game screen and there is a chance that there's going to be a log that rolls into you, and there is no avoiding that log.
Yeah, it's just already there.
It's there, and it's going to hit you, and that's really all there is to it. So, you know, there's some certain frustrations with that sort of thing, but overall, Pitfall is still a game that is fun today.
Agreed. I think Pitfall is a wonderful game.
There you go.
It's definitely not my top choice.
No, I knew without a shadow of a doubt what your top choice was going to be.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, my top choice... Yeah, definitely sneak and peek. Any game where you can sink into the floor
like a
inexplicably.
Like a creep. Awesome.
My top game, this took me a lot more thought than I expected, because there are a lot of 2600 games that I really, really like. You know, I mentioned Pitfall 2. I think it's just a mastercraft of design for the 2600. Junior Pac-Man is mm-hmm. an extraordinary game on the 2600. I like it better than the arcade version, honestly. But the game that always comes to mind when people talk 2600 to me, the first game that pops into my head is always Midnight Magic, which is a pinball game, which is just, it's a really cool table. I like it more than video pinball. Because it's shaped more like an actual pinball table,
right.
And the animation for the little spinny thing in the middle is like super cool, and you hit all the targets, it changes colors. It's a really cool pinball game, and I was in love with this game from the moment I got it. It was like my mom came home with it or something, or we were out and picked it up, and I was like really into the idea of playing it at midnight for some reason, because I was a dork, and still am
cool.
To this day. Yeah, exactly. It was cool. But really, when I thought more about it, as much as I love Midnight Magic, my favorite Atari 2600 game is Combat. It's not a game that you can play by yourself.
Nope.
It is a multiplayer only. But when I think of fun that I have had on the 2600, Combat is just the number one thing. Because when you get two people who enjoy playing that game, playing it together, it is just relentlessly fun. Anytime I bust out a 2600, Combat's always one of my first things that I go to if there's somebody else to play with me. And, you know, playing it with Ferg at the Pain in the Assathon last year was just the highlight of my night. I think back to, like, I had a yard sale several years ago on my old house in Elmwood Park, and we pulled a TV out of my basement and hooked up the 2600 and the NES, and we're just playing games on the lawn while people were buying my stuff. And Combat was one of the things that we played. It's a remarkable game. It's got awesome cover art. It's technically the first 2600 game. It came with the packed in with the original system, and I still think it holds up. It's silly. It's got a lot of skill to it, but it's also very simplistic. You can go completely bananas with, like, the different game modes, like invisible tanks or the bouncing missiles. And
there's such a ridiculous amount of stuff you can do with it. And like you said, if you can get two people that are good at it, it is really fun.
It really
is. To not only play, but to watch as well.
Yeah, because it's just fun rooting for people, and it's also great because it's so varied. Because you think it's just this tank game, but then you get to the planes or the jets.
The planes were so fun. I was
like, they all work differently. It's great. Combat's a masterpiece. It's really a wonderful game.
It really is, and it's so simple.
It is simple and effective.
Yeah.
Just all right.
Fantastic.
Time to move on. We got to keep this train rolling. We got a lot to cover. So, Dan, we're moving on to the Nintendo Entertainment System. Everything going forward is going to be pretty much one system.
Yeah.
So, Dan, your favorite NES game?
My favorite NES game, if you have listened to the show, is no secret. It is Mega Man 2. We have talked ad nauseum about my top choice here. It is the game that I have gone back to more than any other on that system. I love it dearly to this day. It is so, so perfectly crafted. It is a wonderful, wonderful gaming experience. And you can listen to our older shows to get way more about Mega Man than you probably ever wanted to hear. however, the game that I did just want to mention as a runner-up, a game, you know, when I was thinking about this that I came back to, was the G.I. Joe Real American Hero game.
That was the one with the white label, right?
Yes. Is this one that you've played, Chris?
I have. I've played both of them, and I never remember which one is which.
This is the good one.
Okay.
I mean, good
might be obviously
arguable. But it is the one where you start off the very first level, you're in the jungle, and Duke is the leader, and you get to pick from a bunch of different Joes to round out your team, and you always want to pick Snake Eyes because Snake Eyes is awesome, but he's not the best for all of the different missions. So, like, you had to... There's kind of an element of, like, it's kind of like a mix of Contra and Mega Man with the stage design and the weapon design, and you can use different characters to get through it. You can switch to the characters at any time. You can have up to three team members at a time. You could ride around in the vehicles. Like, it's just a very, very cool game. The enemies all looked really cool. Duke is way overpowered, which is, you know, okay. But damn, for being a kid that grew up, you know, in the 80s, getting to play through a game like this that actually worked pretty damn well was awesome. I love this game.
Yeah, it's kind of criminal that nobody has made a modern 80s G.I. Joe game.
Oh, like, the characters are so... are so perfect for...
They're so perfect for a video game
interpretation. Like, they really, really are.
And I've never even been a G.I. Joe fan, but come on, that would be amazing.
It really would. It really, really would. But this game, I mean, if you like Mega Man, if you like Contra, this is for you. G.I. Joe is one of those games that not a lot of people played, but it is awesome.
All right. Cool. Never would have thought of that one. So this was a tough one for me. My top game is, I do love me some Mega Man 2, but as if you listen to the older episodes, I think Mega Man 3 was better. And that's my favorite game for the NES, Mega Man 3. And that was a hard call to make because, Blaster Master exists.
Right.
And Blaster Master is so freaking good. And that was my gut reaction when I was putting this together. It's like, yeah, Blaster Master was probably my favorite game on the system. But Blaster Master has some faults toward the end where Mega Man 3 kind of does not.
Right.
Mega Man 3 stays consistently solid, whereas Blaster Master's got, like, I don't know, some of the difficulty towards the end of the game gets a little, leans a little towards the unfair category.
It certainly does.
The final boss isn't exactly fun to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not super hard once you get his pattern down, but it just takes forever. And it's like, all right, that's the final boss battles in Mega Man 3. Like, the back half of Mega Man 3 is better than the back half of Blaster Master.
Without question. You know, not to say that Blaster Master is bad, but
not by a long shot. It is probably my second favorite game on the system, like, and pretty close to Mega Man 3.
Yeah.
I do think Blaster Master is a absolute masterpiece, a blaster piece,
if you will.
And I also have to give a shout to the Mario games because, you know, whereas we talk about things like, you know, the original Legend of Zelda and the original Metroid, those games, you know, they definitely show their age. But when you go back and play something like Mario 3, well, not you specifically because you have no soul, but when other people go back and play something,
that it's okay.
Particularly Mario 2 and 3, I think they just hold up so well. They're still so much fun to play, and even Mario 1 to an extent. But Mario 2 and 3are really, really high up on this list. Like really high up on this list. Since we were just chatting about Mega Man, I wanted to do a quick little lateral move here on the Stone Age Gamer Facebook page. I posted an article about Mega Man stuff, and Marcelo Mancuso, he wrote on Facebook that we had a quick little chat about the X games, and he started off his post by saying, in a world that truly, parentheses, foolishly, believes Mega Man 2 is the best original Saga Mega Man game, I've no doubt the second half will sell it all, blah, blah, blah. So I asked him what his favorite Mega Man game was, and I wanted to reply to him on Facebook, but I can't type and talk at the same time. And I asked him what his favorite was, and he said it was Mega Man 6.
Really?
Which I think is a really interesting answer. I do think Mega Man 6 is a very underrated game.
I agree with a lot
of his points. He talks about, like, the branching paths and stuff, and he mentions the music, really. Flame Man Stage, one of my favorite Mega Man songs.
sure.
amazing song. And then at the I dropped my mic. He ended his post by saying, "Yours, I bet it's three. You're right, Marcelo. It's three."
Yeah, I don't think the NES games for either of us are a surprise for anybody who knows us or has listened to the show for any length of time.
Yeah, and I feel like sometimes my love of Mega Man, even some franchises on NES, I think, get overshadowed by my overt love of things like Zelda and Metroid and Mario.
But, oh, sure.
I mean, Mega Man 3 is so high on my list of, like, it is one of my go-to games. At any point, I will just sit and play that game. Magnet Man's stage in Mega Man 3 is one of the most perfect 8-bit things that has ever existed to my mind. It's beautiful. The colors are amazing. The level design is flawless. The enemies are great. The music is phenomenal. And I just, everything about Mega Man 3 is just like, it's just wonderful. So, all right, let's keep it going. Gotta keep it tight.
That's right.
So we talked about NES. We got to talk about Master System. Now, Dan, this one probably didn't take a whole lot of thinking for either of us because we wrote an entire top 10 article on this.
We did.
So here we are. Sega Master System. Dan, what is your favorite Sega Master System game?
My favorite game is a tie. I cheated a little bit. They are relatively similar. It's My Hero and Black Belt. They are certainly not the best two games on this system. My Hero is a ridiculously unfair side-scroller where you are a dude in a blue suit, like a leisure suit almost for some reason. I don't know. You got a big red scarf. And you're chilling at the beach or the park with your girl, depending on where you are at the game. At a certain point, and some mohawked punks come up and legit punch your girl right in the fucking face, like, and you're just like, "Wah!" And then they run off with her, and then you have to kung fu your way through a stage that has multiple punks and dudes throwing knives at you, other punk rockers that are dropping bottles out of a window, bottles that are inexplicably just flying across the screen as if they were shot out of a Bullet Bill cannon. Bulldogs. There's some bulldogs in there. There's bombs and there's spikes. And if you get hit once, you're dead. It's super unfair, but I loved it. I loved everything about it. It's got great music. The death animation is ridiculous and funny, and you will die a lot. And what was kind of cool about the game was that you go through this side-scrolling stage where, you again, similar to Pitfall, and like a lot of games from this time period, where you had to really just trial and error and memorize the stage. If you go and look up a YouTube video of My Hero on the Sega Master System, and you look for the long play of it, right? Long plays are a thing. You can get through the game in about 9 minutes. You know, not very long. But that's only after you memorize the enemy patterns. But when you would get to the end of a level, you would, there was a boss fight and it would turn into a very rudimentary, fighting game, you know, where it was no longer one hit kills. You would have to do your jump kick or your punch or whatever. And that was the game. I mean, it was three levels. Stage four was just a repeat of stage one. And that was it. That was the entire game. Black Belt, very similar. If you played Kung Fu on the NES, similar type of game. You are just a dude in a karate gi who can jump really high, and you just kind of walk to the right and beat the shit out of things, and bosses kind of show up halfway through the level. The bosses were always... if you were a fan of 70s Kung Fu movies, you saw things that you had seen in the 70s kung fu flicks, like, in this game. You know, dudes with the long braids and the fucking, like, just ridiculous costumes. You know, there's one dude that has claws on his hands that comes up and he fights you, and it's just fucking cool. Like,
but you gotta mention that the dudes explode in this game.
They do explode when you beat them. They just explode.
I mean, just not like in an explosion, just the pieces of them go like they shatter and fly everywhere. It's weird.
Well, and see, here's the thing, Chris. I don't know if you've ever been in a fight, but that's actually what happens when you. That's how you know you've won. You see, it's not when the other guy can't get up; it's when they explode.
It's when they can't get up because they're in thousands of pieces. They're
literally thousands of pieces. But I love these games. They're very, very similar. I played so much of these two games when I was a kid. I loved them. They were games that I would always show off to people when they came over, and they're like, what the fuck is that thing? Oh, it's a Master System. Check out these two games. And they would inevitably be on the opinion of, like, all right. I like that you like them. It's kind of, you know, Black Belt is certainly, I think, the better of the two. You've played My Hero before, right? You've played both.
I played
of
both
these,
of
right?
these games yeah. before, yeah. I have the Sega cart version of My Hero. Ooh. Right? There was a cartridge version of that too, I think.
There was. It was one of the games that had of both versions. Because, yeah, the original Master System had games that came on cards as well, and you'd slide the little card in there, which was kind of cool. So I love those two. But I did also want to mention fucking Action Fighter. Just the worst title for a video game ever, because it's Spy Hunter, but more Spy Hunter than Spy Hunter. You would drive around and shoot shit, and you would collect the letters action. When you collected action, your car would turn into something else, either like a speedboat or a motorcycle or a fucking plane. It was ridiculous, but it was really fun, and it looked really good. It controlled really well for the time, and it was one of those things where I don't know why. You know, we've talked before, I think, about how my family is clown shoes at best. but I happened to come home from school one day, and sitting on my kitchen table was this game called Action Fighter, and I had no idea what the hell it was about, because the cover art for Master System games is simply atrocious and doesn't do a very good job at all of telling you what you're about to get into. So, like, you would jump in, and the beginning of Action Fighter is great, because there's a blue screen that pops up, and it says, Secret Command, First Mission, Sink. And then there's three battleships and a picture on this, like, blue piece of paper. And then at the bottom of it, it just says President. Like, the president's name is President. Like, just stupid. And you start off as your motorcycle, and you're driving through and shooting the hell out of other dudes on motorcycles and cars, and there would be a Sega truck that would pop up, and you would get, you know, missiles or oil slicks or dumb stuff, and this game's awesome. So fun.
You turn into a car eventually.
You turn into a car, and then you turn into a plane.
And then you turn into a plane, which is awesome. And, like, the turning into the car is super cool, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, it just, like, the pieces, it's almost like you're surrounded by a car. Like,
yeah,
the pieces kind of like
come
to you, and then you're a car.
Yeah.
Which is, it's really cool. This, I mean, I like this game more than I like Spy Hunter. I mean,
I do. This is a better game.
It is. Yeah. I would agree with that, especially because it's got the shooter elements, you know, like it just becomes a regular scrolling shooter once you're the plane. This is a rad game.
I didn't realize that this is where my love of shmups came from, but this is absolutely where it came from.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those kind of genre blenders, like where it's, you know, you think of something like Guardian Legend, but like the shooter segments in Guardian Legend aren't phenomenal.
Yeah, they're
this
very
is
good
like,
in this game.
It's straight up Xevious, you know,
yeah.
Like you've got the bombs you can drop as well. And this is a solid game.
I love it. Love that game. Mm-mm-mm.
All right. Well, my turn. My favorite Sega Master System game really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who has listened to me talk about anything relating to the Sega Master System. It is Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap. It is not even just one of my favorite Master System games. It's one of my favorite 8-bit games. I like this game more than I like a lot of NES games. The Dragon's Trap is incredible. It is... has been rendered almost useless now that the remake came out, because the remake is that good. and that faithful. But at the same time, the fact that this game transcends the shortcomings of the Master System as well as it does. I've gone on at great length about this game on the show before, and my love of it has not waned even a little. I can still play through the Master System version just as well as I can play through the new remake, which is gorgeous and incredible. And Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap is amazing. If you've never played it before, I would say get it on the Wii Virtual Console, but you can't anymore. So just get the new version. It's on all the current generation platforms. You can switch the graphics and the sound to the original Master System version if you really want to see what that was like. It's not 100% perfect to the Master System one, because the Master System one wasn't in widescreen, but it is as close as you need to get to it. You know, you're not really losing much by playing it on your HD TV in widescreen as opposed to playing it on a CRT with a Master System controller in your hand. It's a masterpiece. It's amazing. It is one of the best games I've most well put together games I've ever seen. It's just incredible and great music, which is not something you can usually say about Master System games.
No, it's not. But it's
much
fantastic in that game.
Much like the visuals, the compositions of the music transcend the screechy tones of the Master System in unbelievably perfect ways. It's an incredible, incredible game. All right, let's move on to our first handheld. We are talking the original Game Boy. I was going to kind of lump this in with Game Boy Color. I don't know if your answer would still be the same if I did that.
It would.
All right, then, yeah, we're covering Game Boy/Game Boy Color. So talk to me, Dan.
Talk
to me about your favorite Game Boy game. This is a surprise to me.
This is nobody else's favorite Game Boy game. I'm pretty confident in that. My favorite Game Boy game is Fist of the North Star. Based on the anime, manga? I don't even know what it was based on at the time. I had no idea what Fist of the North Star was. When I got this game, it was just a game that I got. And it is a fighting game starring all of your, you know, favorites from the series, who I had no idea who they were. I just thought they looked cool on the box art. And it is a full-fledged fighting game on the original black and white Game Boy. And it's awesome. All of the characters look great. They managed to capture the character designs in Fist of the North Star are very cool. Are you familiar with the series at all?
I'm slightly familiar with it. I know I've seen some of it, but it's not something I've ever really spent time watching.
Badass martial arts dudes, right?
Yeah.
So 80s.
You're already dead.
80s anime kind of stuff. You know, like a more serious, this is a shitty way to describe it, I feel, but a more serious Dragon Ball? Like, Kenshiro is not goofy like Goku, but is a badass martial artist kind of thing. The villains are not silly and over the top in the same way that like Cell and Frieza are over the top. Rao is certainly still over the top and whatnot, and Jaggi and whatever. But this game, you could, again, similarly to Black Belt, you could jump inexplicably high.
That's a fighting game trope, though. I mean,
yeah, but this was like
Street Fighter.
This was like top of the screen high.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is definitely bordering on Star Wars Masters of Taras Kassi and the floatiness of it. But I mean,
it was such
all things
a
considered.
Floaty game. A super, super floaty game. But you could pick the different characters, and they all fought a little different. They all had projectiles. There was a little meter that would constantly fill up underneath the your health bar. And when that was full, if you hit an attack, you would shoot out, like, certain characters had fireballs, certain characters had knives, like, whatever your character's thing was. You had a projectile that would shoot out, and you didn't get to control. Like, you couldn't do it whenever you wanted to. It was only when the meter was full, and then you had punches and kicks. You know, and for the time, it looked awesome. Like, you could, the way the characters looked was very cool, and you could, you know, go through and just beat the shit out of each other. And it was great. I adored this game. And every time I would show this to people, they would be like, what is this? We come over, you show us some My Hero and some black belt shit, and now you're telling us to play Fist of the North Star in the game. Shut up. We're not playing this. This is stupid.
But yeah, I was just watching a YouTube video of it. I can't say that I'm all that impressed, but
it's a fighting game on the Game Boy with characters that I didn't know at the time, but you know, I grew to appreciate and like, and you know, kind of opened up a whole different world.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because that's what happened with me and Naruto.
Yeah,
I didn't even know Naruto was a thing, but my buddies that worked at the Game Crazy in Brooklyn had imported the GameCube Naruto fighting games, mm-hmm. which are incredible.
They're so good.
They're so good, and I had no idea it was based on something. I just thought it was a fighting game because it didn't seem like a licensed fighting game. It seemed like this is just something that someone made because it's that good, and the characters worked so well. And when I eventually found out it was anime, and I watched it, and it was pretty cool. But yeah, that's how I was introduced to Naruto, was through the GameCube game.
Yeah, so I mean, that this game is always going to be my my very favorite Game Boy game. I still pull it out from time to time. I mean, like Tetris was the obvious one. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I get that.
Tetris is obvious. That's everybody. Like, of course, that's my favorite Game Boy game. I've played that game more than any other game ever.
I will say this about Fist of the North Star, though, like, as fighting games on Game Boy go, like, if you compare this to Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, this is easily more functional.
Oh, it was
either
fun.
Of those games. Yeah, and except, of course, the otherworldly port of Street Fighter Alpha for Game Boy Color.
Yeah, there's no reason
you've never
that should exist.
That game works so well and looks so good, it is freaky. Like, there's no way that some voodoo magic went into making that game for Game Boy Color, but I digress. You had a runner up you wanted to mention too,
I did.
Right?
The original Batman for Game Boy, where
the one where he's jumping jumping super high and has a gun, right?
Yeah. It's just a really good platformer. it's not a very good Batman game, but he has a gun and you can fly the Batwing, and it's awesome.
Yeah, that game's pretty awesome. Man, I'm looking at a YouTube video of Street Fighter Alpha running on Game Boy Color. I will never forget when I bought that game. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. How are you doing this? Yeah. Like, this is a Game Boy Color. This isn't much more powerful than an NES. And this is just, it moves and looks great.
They did a great job.
They
did a
freaky,
really, really great job. So,
Batman on Game Boy, pretty rad game.
Batman on Game Boy, very weird game. Makes sense. Like, you couldn't really make a full-fledged fun Batman game with two buttons.
I mean, this is what's weird about this is that, you know, Sunsoft made Batman for NES, which was a full-fledged Batman game with two buttons. Now, granted, it was also not like there's no stealth involved, but it was this was how you make licensed games back then, and Batman for NES is badass. I feel like Batman for Game Boy was a reskin,
I believe,
of
it
something
was.
Else. I'm trying to development.
I don't know. It works. You could get a sweet Batarang power up where two Batarangs would be flying around you as you were running through, and your fucking gun bullets would get bigger. It's just dumb. I mean, it's based off the 89 movie, so you know, if that's not your cup of tea, this isn't for you. But like the fucking...
It's loosely based off of that, just like the NES game. Like, Batman wasn't purple in that movie.
No, he definitely was. You haven't seen it in a while.
Fair enough.
But, I don't know. I always loved this Batman game. It was so weird. Like, Batman running around with a gun and, like, crazy power-ups. And, like, it's just a run-and-gun shooter, you know? That happens to have a Batman skin on it. But the cutscenes looked amazing. Blown away by how good they look.
Sunsoft was awesome.
Super cool game. Everybody should check this weird-ass Batman game out.
They should. Well, I mean, my runner-up is another obvious one. It's not Tetris, actually. I've always enjoyed the Tetris Game Boy game, but honestly, I played more of the NES version than the Game Boy version. Mm-hmm. So my runner-up for favorite Game Boy game is Super Mario Land. Not Super Mario Land 2, which many people would argue is the superior game. I actually get a little bit more out of the first Super Mario Land myself because it is more simplistic. It's a bit more weird and the just undeniably charming Hyptonaka soundtrack.
I certainly enjoy that one more.
Yeah, and like Super Mario Land 2 is really, really awesome, but it feels even less like a Mario game to me, mostly because it's what eventually turned into the Wario Land games, which have just a more slow, methodical feel. But anyway, I think Super Mario Land's incredible. I think it's still fun to play. It's such a weird game, but it's such a neat piece of evolution to see, like, all right, now let's take Super Mario Brothers, but now downgrade it to a black and white Game Boy and make it work. And I think that they did.
I really love it.
I really love that game. And, you know, it's just the really clever way they got around things. Like, all right, well, we can't do the, you know, kick the turtle shell and have it move and bounce around. So we're just going to have them explode and call them something different. We can't do the fireballs that bounce. So instead, we're going to do super balls that bounce and only move in a straight line trajectory. Like, they all made sense as like, oh, this is just a different power up. But when you realize that they were solutions to problems, it was really cool. I thought there was really there's just so much really clever in there. Yeah, I mean, it had a villain that wasn't Bowser. You know, you fought the alien Tatanga. This is where Daisy came from. This is where there's floating heads with wings on them and that almost offensively Chinese area in the game. It was just...
No, there's nothing almost offensive about that. That is just straight up offensive.
Ah, it's culturally awesome.
Sure.
No, my favorite game for Game Boy, was actually a complete no-brainer. Once I thought about it, I was like, oh, it's gotta be this. It's Mario's Picross. Mario's Picross I played solidly for 13 years and still occasionally go back to when I just want to go back to an older Picross game. Because there were no Picross games between this one and the Picross DS here in America. And I freaking love Picross. And I consistently played this game over and over again for 13 solid years. And still do. I just still go back to it. Picross is wonderful. I love it. I will play one almost every night once I'm in the... You know, I'll get into moods where I go a couple of months and I'll play just every night. And when this was re-released on 3DS, I was the happiest guy in the world. Because then I could retire my Game Boy Advance SP next to the bed and just play it there. You know, now there's Picross S on the Switch. There was all the Picross E games on the 3DS. 3D Picross is also incredible, but Mario's Picross, that was the one, man. That was the first one that got my attention. It's the one that I go back to the most. It's got incredible music. It controls like a dream. It's got a great tutorial sequence. All the puzzles are clever. Picross is amazing, and Mario's Picross is hands down my favorite Game Boy game.
Puzzle games are the best.
They truly are. Moving on, let's hit the TurboGrafx-16. This is another thing that Dan and I wrote an entire article series about, so we don't really need to go too in-depth in this. If you really want to learn more about why we love these games, you can check out the article, but we'll hit up some quickness just to make the announcements, as it were. So, Dan, talk to me about your favorite TurboGrafx-16 games.
Surprisingly enough, it was Splatterhouse.
Shocker.
Shocker. We have talked so much about Splatterhouse and why I love it. Like you said, just go read the stuff. Runner-up game for that was Newtopia, also a game that we have covered quite a bit. But, you know, just as a quick hit, because I'm sure more people are familiar with Splatterhouse if this is the first time you're hearing the word Newtopia, it is a very good Legend of Zelda clone on the TurboGrafx.
It is. We played 2 for the summer series, right?
I like 2 better because the fire wand is badass. But just a really, really excellent Zelda clone. And Newtopia, I feel like it was more of my favorite. Like I said, Newtopia 2, I think, is a better game. The fire rod is or fire wand is badass. The reason I put Newtopia on this list is because I loved it more because there was always that, like, that feeling of envy of, like, oh, but people are, like, they have this thing over here. But then it was like, oh, Newtopia, I got the thing, too. Right? The system that I think is cool and, like, that makes me feel cooler because I have it. Like, I also have the thing that you have. And look, it's really fucking good. So yeah, we've written, we've talked about these two excellent games you should definitely check out.
Awesome. Agreed. My favorite TurboGrafx-16 game is actually for the Turbo CD, I believe.
Yep.
It is Lords of Thunder. And I did not play this on the original hardware. I played it on the Wii Virtual Console. And I think it is just one of the best 2D shooters I've ever played.
It certainly is.
It's freaking awesome, man. And it's called Lords of Thunder.
That's pretty great. I mean, as far as video game titles go.
It's just badass. This isn't like a deep experience or anything that like... and it's not my favorite shooter of all time. That definitely goes to UN Squadron on Super NES. But this is really high up there because Lords of Thunder is freaking cool. I didn't spend a crap load of time with the TurboGrafx-16. I have one. I didn't have one when I was a little kid, but I always kind of wanted one. And I'm kind of glad I didn't get one because I just would have been something else taking me away from my NES. And I probably wouldn't have spent as much time with it because, you know, at the end of the day, as much as I dig TurboGrafx-16 games, they're not ones that I go back to all that much. You know, like I think of the big games like Airzonk is great.
Right.
But really at the end of the day, when it comes down
Legendary
to like,
if Axe I'm going to, is awesome.
Is pretty cool. But if I'm going to go back and play TurboGrafx-16, I'm either playing Lords of Thunder or I'm playing Rondo of Blood, right. Which are both extraordinary games. Rondo of Blood would be my runner up for favorite TurboGrafx-16 game. Cause Rondo of Blood's amazing, really but Lords is. Of Thunder is Lords of freaking Thunder, man. That game is awesome. On every conceivable level.
It's not Blazing Lasers, but it's damn good. It's not Blazing Saddles either. Fucking great.
No, movie. No, it's definitely not a movie.
Anyway.
All right, excellent moving stuff. On. So last category before the break. We're going to split this right down the middle. So the last category before the break is the Sega Genesis / Sega CD / 32X. So that whole 16-bit Sega system amalgamation there. Dan, what are your favorite? What is your favorite game for the Sega Genesis?
Obviously, Night Trap. I mean, what a fucking masterpiece!
What an amazing game! I hate that game.
It's so bad, so stupid. In the
it got that re-release, and like even people I know and respect were like, "I'm playing the hell out of Night Trap. I can't wait to get that re-release." I'm like, "Why though?
Why?
This game is not fun.
No, it's not. it's broken fundamentally.
Anyway,
a game I think we've talked about pretty extensively on here before in some of our older shows. Like you said earlier, though, we don't go back and listen to them. is Toe Jam and Earl, and this was
Know that we did because I was really surprised that you put this as your top game. I didn't know you liked this game that much.
This was a hard choice because, you know, not having a Genesis and my cousin being the one that had the Genesis when we were kids. This was a game that we played together, and that really, I think, is what solidified it as my top pick. And Toe Jam and Earl, you are one of two funky space aliens whose funky spaceship has crashed and broken into lots of little pieces, almost like they were punched by the dude in Black Belt. And your mission is to creep around this strange planet and collect shit and find pieces of your spaceship so you can get home. That's it. Like, you don't fight. You can sneak. That's like your
attack.
There's
lots of presents.
There's lots of presents everywhere. You can pick up moldy cheese, which is kind of funny. But you just walk around and pick up stuff. And it had a great soundtrack, and the characters looked really cool. They are so stereotypically early 90s white guy idea of what rap is. which is kind of awesome to go back and look at now, because, like, oh boy, was it not at all culturally what any of that was. But, you know, it's unoffensive and charming and delightful to play co-op. So
it really is. It's a wonderful game. It's Karen, my wife's. It's her favorite video game.
It's actually
I think it's probably Runner 2 at this point. But yeah, she loved Toe Jam and Earl.
It's a great way to kill some time with a friend, you know, and like you would pick up different pieces of your spaceship and they all had stupid names. It was fun.
Very colorful, great character designs. Cannot wait for the new Toe Jam and Earl game, Back in the Groove.
Yes.
Coming out later this year.
Sorry, I was blanking on the subtitle for that one. Back in the Groove should be should be awesome. My my runner-up for this one was the seminal, the greatest hockey game ever made, NHL 94, where you could just whoop the shit out of people and get that, you know, get them stretchered off the ice. Great. It is the pinnacle of hockey games. And comparing it to hockey games now, it is basic and you can't do all the fun moves and all the fancy shit, but when the gameplay is as perfect as it got in NHL 94, there really is no reason to play any other hockey game. I mean, Hartford, right. The Whale.
Thank you, Brody. my favorite Genesis game, let's get to that, would be, well, my runner-up was Sonic 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think it's really going out on a limb to say that the Sonic games are among the, you know, they're easily the most popular Genesis games, but they're also probably the best crafted ones. They're like the most, it almost seemed like this, and I know the system wasn't, but it seemed like when looking at the Sonic games that the system was designed for them. You know, yes. They take advantage of the system in such great ways. And when it comes to, you know, video and audio, they're just wonderful. And I think Sonic 2 was the best of that. Sonic 3 would have gotten my vote over Sonic 2, but Sonic 3 isn't finished. You know,
right.
Sonic 3 was like, well, here it is. And here's the rest of it in Sonic and Knuckles. So there's kind of that. But really when I thought about it a little bit more, because the Sonic 2 was my first, you know, just initial gut reaction. And I was like, nah, you know what? Rocket Knight Adventures is my favorite Genesis game.
Such an underappreciated game.
It's amazing. And it's like, that was the game, like Sonic the Hedgehog and Quackshot were like the two games that my friends had that I was just like, man, that's really cool. I kind of want a Genesis, but it was Rocket Knight Adventures that like really, really sold me. That game is just, is Konami at their best. It is so good. And I like it better than its sequels. Sparkster for Genesis and for Super Nintendo, both different games, are both really good. The Rocket Knight that came out on Xbox 360 and PS3, I think, is not very good. It's just a soulless shell, but of a game that apes the play style of these. But the original Rocket Knight Adventures, which is only on Genesis, has never been re-released on anything for some goddamn reason, is so good. It's so much fun. The sprites are so well drawn and so expressive. Like Sparkster himself, the main character, is just, he's delightful. He's adorable. He's a possum with a jetpack dressed as a knight with a laser sword. It's like,
what
this
more
is
do you
so
need?
Ridiculous. It's got a really incredibly bizarre soundtrack, which I did a wave back on it. Actually, it was the episode I recorded with Ollie before his audio crapped out and I had to re-record it with somebody else. But the soundtrack in this game is really strange because the music is mostly really good, but a lot of it doesn't really fit the stages that they play with,
right?
Which is weird. Like, but then sometimes when it works, it really works. And particularly this has my all-time favorite boss music in it. The actual like main boss battles, not the mini bosses. It's the best boss music I've ever heard. It is it's freaking amazing. And when you think about, like, it does all these great tricks where it, you know, the music will like skip a beat and it just to kind of throw you off guard, like it just subliminally putting you off guard. And it's that kind of just the thought that was put into these kinds of things. Like, I think of playing this game and I think of this one boss character, like it reminds me a lot of the giant robot in Contra 3 the Alien Wars that like tears through the back wall.
Yeah.
But like somehow this is even more intense, where it's this giant like centipede monster that like busts through the ceiling and the walls, and like you'll be fighting or whatever with this crazy intense music and like these clanging noises where his tail will come in through one side of the wall and he's also sticking out of the ceiling at the same time, and you're like ducking in the corner while the tail is wagging and you're just trying to attack and dodge all these attacks at the same time. Rocket Knight Adventures is freaking awesome. It's got a great mechanic, and it really is a terribly underappreciated game because it's never been anywhere else besides the Genesis. And Konami needs to get their shit together and not only port this and the Sparkster games to other platforms, but they should really hire somebody else to make a new Rocket Knight Adventures game.
I am very excited for the iOS mobile multiplayer's Rocket Knight Adventure sequel.
Multiplayer only, yeah.
Should be awesome.
That one's only going to be on Androids, actually.
It's going to be an N-Gage exclusive.
Love
it.
Side talking. All right. N-Gage jokes never get old, and neither do our commercials. So we're going that's right. We're going to take ourselves a quick break. When we come back, we're going to, hopefully before the end of the night, finish this podcast up by talking about our favorites for a handful of other systems, including stuff like the Super Nintendo, the GBA, and the Sega Saturn even. So you are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, on the 20th episode of the Nonstop Comic Shop podcast, travel back to a simpler time. I'm a simple man, Chris. I believe. Anyway, focus.
I believe that fire is magic, and it scares me a lot.
A time when nut commercials were extremely entertaining. Jordan, anyway. But if nut commercials aren't enough to lull you in, how about the NSCS crew agreeing with Karen and Chris about Jessica Jones Season 2 being awesome? Or perhaps a review of Scarlet Witch, Witched Road. No matter what you enjoy, if it's comics, you'll probably like Nonstop Comic Shop, Episode 20, Ethical Wyverns Love Emerald Warlock.
If you missed it on this week's episode, we did Jessica Jones Season 2, where Karen and I both resoundingly agreed that it was awesome, and Evan thought it was dumb, because he's dumb.
Really? I really enjoyed it.
I did too.
There's not much you can do with Jessica Jones other than what they did. She's kind of one-dimensional.
It wasn't even her. He was like, there's too many side characters and side plots. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's a TV show.
Yeah.
It can't just be about Jessica Jones.
She's not that interesting.
She's very entertaining. But yeah, I'm okay with there being a whole...
Spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, next up... In the latest episode of the Mutant Musings podcast, Jonathan and Patty confront their feelings about the Exiles, and particularly how underwhelmed they are by it. They also postulate about whether or not X-Men Gold can get even golder by adding new members. Mm. Plus, they get a visit from Jordan and Brendan from Nonstop Comic Shop podcast to discuss their very different opinions relating to the quality of the apparently rather divisive comic NYX, or NYX, or I don't know, it's the X-23 comic.
I always thought it was NYX.
I think it is, too. I could be wrong. I don't know. I never read it, but I always thought it was one of those things that not a lot of people really cared about unless they were fans of X-23. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Jordan and Brendan hate that book.
I don't like it.
Well, all right, then. I guess you side with them. I think Jonathan and Patty rather liked it. Anyway, it's really everything you could possibly want in an episode of Mutant Musings. So head over to Geekade.com and listen to Mutant Musings, Episode 22. Dama no, more like Dama yes.
Ooh. I
love Jonathan.
Pretty great. I think we should all get together and irrationally hate on these still photos that we've all seen of the Teen Titans show. Because,
yeah.
I mean,
bad
it might be great, but I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a live-action DC property. It's probably not going to be great.
Finally.
Well, they're TV shows. Anyway.
Karen from Chris's house, also this week's episode, she loves Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. La-di-da-di-da. She loves it so much. I don't get the joke, but okay. She loves it so much.
If you listen to the show, you do. So the three people that listen to that show that may also listen to this, they think that's hilarious.
Did I do it right? Was I supposed to sing? It doesn't matter. She loves it so much, Chris. I'm sure you know this. You're married to her. A few weeks ago, she went to see its live tour, and it was amazing. Tickets were hard to come by, so she wrote a little article about the show so you could experience it vicariously through her. just to brag about a tiny little triumph, when this article was posted on Twitter, I think is how you say it, we tagged...
Twitter.
On the Twitter, we tagged the stars of the show, four of them liked it, and two of them retweeted it. So if you want to be in the company of famous TV stars, and really, who doesn't... I mean, who doesn't want to be in spoken of in the same breath as Josh Duhamel? Check out Crazy Ex-Girlfriend Live. What is this, a podcast? Located in the think tank. Josh Duhamel's on that show, right?
There's a character named Josh, I think.
Close enough.
Close enough. You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com.
I could literally trip over Josh Duhamel in the street and not fucking know it was Josh Duhamel.
And we're back. Just talking about bags and Josh Duhamel. That's what we do.
Breaks are weird.
You don't know how long our break was. It could have been 20 minutes.
Could have been.
Just bags and Josh Duhamel.
You want to see the most beautiful thing I've ever seen? Picture Josh Duhamel on a bag floating around. You're like, ugh.
How's he doing that? How's he riding that?
This movie is culturally inappropriate now because of what we know about Kevin Spacey.
Ooh, wow. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Anyway
let's continue talking about our favorite games on our some of our most important systems, I guess is what we'd call it. So we're currently going to move on to the Neo Geo, which I am woefully unqualified to talk about because I have really not played very many Neo Geo games, as my research concluded. But I know Dan has, and he really wanted to talk about it. So, Dan, what is your favorite Neo Geo game?
I fucking love Magician Lord. Love this game so much. I believe we've talked about it briefly on the show before. But see, the thing about Neo Geo games was that they were arcade games. So they were designed to steal all of your money. And Magician Lord is no different. When the game came out, you know, the arcade games were side-scrolling adventure games where... You know, you killed a bunch of stuff to get to the boss, and the levels were highly unfair and structured to kill you as quickly as possible. And they did quite often in this game, but what I really loved about it was the main character, the Magician Lord, would get power-ups throughout the game, and you could change into completely different characters that changed the way you played through and fought the enemy. So, like... Dragon Man was awesome because instead of being a magician who threw, like, lightning boomerang things, you changed into a fucking dragon wearing armor. You spit fire at people, and there was a... You could change into a ninja who was badass, and it was just a really cool game. The character animation is slow, certainly, in the game, but, you know, again, that was... by design to not make you the most mobile combatant, but it all looks really good. The backgrounds are cool. The bosses were really cool. The main bad guy would come in after you beat a stage and talk some crazy shit to you. Like, after you beat the first stage, he says something like, "What impudence, now face your trial by God." It's like, damn, son, relax. Just trying to kill you, man. Cool. Just a badass game, though. I loved this game. And being able to play it at home and, you know, with infinite continues really made it a much better experience overall, because it is highly unfair when, you know, playing it in an arcade. But still just a very, very badass game. And to follow that up, just a runner-up, would be the King of Fighters games. I fucking love these games, and you know, they were a joke at certain times because so many of them came out, but so many of them were really good. The King of Fighters games are super solid fighting games. Some of them, I don't think any of them ever, like, I don't think it's fair to say, I could be wrong, but I don't think any of them ever hit the level that Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo hit. but I would say that a lot of them got very close, and a lot of the King of Fighter games were better than some of the other ancillary Street Fighter games. So there you go.
All right.
There you have it.
Yeah, it's fair.
You're not a big King of Fighters guy, right?
No, I never got into it.
Terry Bogard
loved Street Fighter. Never really spent a lot of time with King of Fighters. I didn't really have any arcades near me that had one of the Neo Geo machines in them.
Mm-hmm.
There was always a decent chunk of mystique around the Neo Geo for me, but right. I never broke through that to really, I obviously didn't get one because I wasn't a freaking millionaire, but so I have really not played very many Neo Geo games. I've played games by SNK.
Sure.
Lots of them, but actual Neo Geo titles I have not played very many of. The one that sticks out to me as a game that I genuinely love, because it is a really interesting fighting game, is the original Samurai Showdown.
Mm.
Truth be also told, excellent. The version of this I've played the most of is the Genesis one.
Sure.
And when I finally played the Neo Geo version, I lost my damn mind.
Because it looks so much better. And
the Genesis one looks good. Like, it is a good port. I like it better than the Super Nintendo one because the Super Nintendo one was a little more zoomed out. So I think it technically played a little better. But the Genesis version had more of the flash because everything was a little more zoomed in. And I know that a lot of folks believe that the sequels to this game are better. And I'm sure that they are. I've never really bothered with them, to be honest, because the original Samurai Showdown is such perfection to me in what it is. I love the absolute insane cast of characters in this game. Like, whereas King of Fighters always felt so derivative of Street Fighter to me, Samurai Showdown was just this unique thing because it was a very much a weapons-based fighter.
Very much.
And it was like, you've got your weak, medium, and fierce, but they're not like the heavy kicks or whatever in Street Fighter. They're like, if you land an attack with your heavy sword as Hayamaru, like you're taking like a quarter of their energy away because
it's sword.
A giant haymaker with a freaking sword.
You hit somebody with a sword and shit goes down.
The characters in this are so out of control. Like, Hayamaru is awesome, right? He's just like you're kind of straightforward, ninja type design, but he just looks really cool. But then you've got Tam Tam, who's like 12 feet tall, but he's crouched in half the entire time, and he's just completely bonkers.
Weird.
Or Jen Ann, who, like, you would think that he's like a Blanka ripoff, but he's way crazier than Blanka.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's super short, but he's got like a 3 foot tall Freddy Krueger glove on, and he, like, throws barf potions at you or something, like purple clouds of poison death, and he does like Blanka spin around move, but he holds out his giant claw hand while he does it. He's so freaking weird, man. Jenna, it's weird. And like Earthquake is just humongous.
Yeah, it fills the screen and has a very cool weapon, like the blade on the chain or the hook on the chain, I guess.
Yeah, like, Earthquake is, like, way cooler than Abigail in Street Fighter V.
Way cooler.
He's that done right. Not that I've spent much time with it. I just don't love the redesign of Abigail for Street Fighter V. We talked about that. But, Samurai Showdown is just a damn good fighting game. And I can't even think of a runner-up for Neo Geo because I can't think of... Like, I've barely played...
Just say Metal Slug.
That's what I was just going to say. I've barely played any of the Metal Slug games. So I'm just going straight up Samurai Showdown. All right, this next one, your number one didn't surprise me. Your number two does.
Really?
Like, a lot. I had absolutely no idea how much you liked this property, and I have questions for you. But anyway,
next
one, it is. We're talking about the Super Nintendo Entertainment System here, and this was, it's my favorite system of all time, as we have discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, what is your favorite Super Nintendo game?
Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past.
Surprise! We talked about it last week.
Yeah, we don't need to. We don't need to cover that again. We've talked about that. We've dedicated episodes to it. It is a game changer. It is the equivalent back then of what God of War was when that came out.
Agreed. Link to the Past is incredible.
That's it. We don't have to say anything more.
We've talked
way, way more about that game than really is, normal.
I think it's normal for A Link to the Past.
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. Maybe not in 200 episodes, though. Kind of derivative of ourselves. Anyway.
What the... Talk to me about your runner-up, because this surprised the hell out of me.
When Killer Instinct came out, I had never seen a fighting game that looked like that. I had never played something that was so heavily focused on combos the way that it was. The characters were so cool. And
agreed.
The fact that it was original, you know, like Street Fighter had been around for a little while at this point. You know, the SNK fighting games are great, and I do love them. But, like you said, somewhat derivative of Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat had been around. The other fighting games that were coming out at this time, most of them were garbage.
And really early 3D. You know, this was around when you, like, Killer Instinct hit arcades around when, like, Tekken was out, mm-hmm. Virtua Fighter was out. And Killer Instinct just went a completely different direction.
Yeah. So, realistic, I mean, at the time, you know, this was real. You know, they looked real. They were just cool. And there was something so awesome about these characters and the way that they fought. I mean, like, looking back at the game now, there's not a bad character in that original bunch outside of maybe fucking Fulgore. I just think he just looks stupid.
Fulgore is awesome. I don't like He's a Fulgore. Giant death robot with a ponytail for no goddamn reason.
Yeah, it's very Liefeld. I don't love that. But the first time that you pulled off a combo and the announcers fucking Ultra! Fucking screaming at you. God, this is badass. This is amazing. I feel so
did you,
fucking cool playing this.
Did you play this first on Super Nintendo or in the arcades?
Super Nintendo.
That's really interesting.
In the arcades.
Holy crap.
And then eventually saw an arcade machine and was like, oh my God.
Yeah, because as cool as the Super Nintendo one is, the arcade game is like leagues better.
Oh, it really is. It's not even
well, that's
close.
Just it. It's leagues better looking, but the Super Nintendo game is so impressive because they fit that freaking arcade game into the Super Nintendo. It works.
It plays perfectly.
Incredibly well. But like the visuals and the sound in the arcade game, because as awesome as it was to have those announcers and whatnot, like, so I played the arcade version first, and when I played the Super Nintendo version, I was very impressed because they fit it into a Super Nintendo game. But, like, you know, when you've pulled off an Ultra combo and you got Ultra and then with a handful of, like, echoes behind it,
yeah,
that was cool. But the first time I did it, I saw somebody do an Ultra combo in the arcade version, and the guy just yells, Ultra combo! It was, like, fucking nuts. Dude, Killer Instinct the arcade was insane, and I've always remember when I heard about them making it on Super Nintendo, I was like, how are they going to cram that in there? And I was almost didn't buy it because I was reading GamePro at the time, and they said that they didn't have any of the announcer voices in there in their review. And I was like, oh, that sucks. And then I bought the game anyway, and it had the announcer voice, and I was like, you freaking reviewing unfinished things, yeah, whatever.
Pricks.
Yeah, but no, Killer Instinct on Super Nintendo is great. I'm just so shocked that, because we've talked about Killer Instinct on Xbox One and how much we want to like it more than we do. I just never knew that you had that level of reverence for Killer Instinct.
When I thought about it, you know, and I was thinking back to the games that I really loved on my Super Nintendo, and, you know, obviously, like, you know, there are other games that we could talk about, but, man, I played the hell out of this game. This was one of those games where, like, you know, you got the strategy guide so you can sit and practice the combos and trying to learn, like, Jago's combos or Orchid's combos or Chief Thunder, who I always used because nobody else used him, and he was badass with his
time. I used Thunder. I had great combos with him, too.
Oh, he was so cool. Just so cool. I mean, there was just, like, the fatalities were stupid. I never really cared about them because that's not what this game was about. I had never played a fighting game. Still haven't. That was this focused on combos and the combos being that much fun to pull off.
Yeah, because the thing about the fatalities in this one, like some of them were vaguely cool, but the cool way to finish somebody was with an ultra.
Yeah.
Like that's what you did, or humiliation if you could pull those off.
Yeah. Yeah, but no. And I also really liked the I just thought it was cool how like when you would start the second round of the fight, like whoever you would beat or the person who beat you, like you would just get back up.
Yeah, the round didn't actually, like, the rounds would continue, but the screen wouldn't reset. Like, in Street Fighter or pretty much every other fighting game, like, you know, the round's over, you both start with full health.
Yeah.
But you both have exactly two health bars.
Yep.
And it's whoever can get through both health bars first. That's how it worked. It's a great game. It's a great game. I loved Killer Instinct. I loved Killer Instinct 2 and Gold as well. And I wish that I like the character designs in the new one, because having played a bit of the new one, it is a solid Killer Instinct game. At the end of the day, it is relatively fun to play. I wish I had it so that I could learn it, but I don't wish I had it enough that I would buy an Xbox One for it.
Yeah, no.
So this was actually very difficult for me to work through what my favorite Super Nintendo game is. Obviously, A Link to the Past is one of my runner-ups, because Link to the Past, as we've said, is a freaking masterpiece, and I could never hold it against anyone to say that Link to the Past is their favorite Super Nintendo game, because it's amazing. Super Mario World is one of the games I've probably played the most in my life. It's my favorite Mario game by several miles. It's wonderful. It's so cleverly built. It's so perfect in damn near every respect. I love Super Mario World. It's just one of the most perfect games I've ever played. So saying that those two are my runners up, believe me when I say that I have so much respect in the world for my number one choice, which is Super Metroid, which I think is not only one of the most perfect games ever made, it's just one of the most perfect examples of what a video game can be. Super Metroid is... We did a Metroid retrospective, so I mean, we've talked about this game a bunch, but I just gotta say the words anytime that this comes up, because this was one of those things we talked about this last week, that witnessing that evolution, you know, from like comparing the original Legend of Zelda to going to Zelda 2 and then Link to the Past, you know, Super Mario Bros. 3, Super Mario World, like those evolutions from the 8-bit to the 16-bit era were just incredible. And Super Metroid was probably the one that hit me the hardest, because it was kind of unexpected, you know, because video game news came out in a very different way back then. And I remember seeing the cover of Game Fan was the first time I saw Super Metroid. And the caption was, "How does Nintendo make games this good?" And I will never forget the experience of playing this game. It is... every piece of it, every detail of it, the little splashes of water that come off of Samus' feet when she runs outside in the rain, it's the whole world design, the power-ups that you get, the visuals, the sound, everything is perfect in this game, including the storytelling, which is, this is one of the best examples that I could possibly think of a type of storytelling that can only be done via a video game. Because mm-hmm. with the exception of the intro sequence, the story of the game is told by you playing it, you know? There are no like big cutscenes that stop where there's a bunch of exposition like in Metroid Fusion or anything. There is absolutely none of that. The cutscenes are the game. Like when you encounter the baby Metroid, you hear the sounds that creature makes and you remember that that's what it is. Like the game doesn't hold your hand, but it gives you just enough information to piece together what's going on without without any words being spoken. And it is a mastercraft of video game creation. It is such an incredible game. And I believe it holds up 110 billion% today. It is my favorite Metroid game. It's my favorite Super Nintendo game. It is it's probably my number two or number three favorite game of all time for any platform ever. Super Metroid is amazing.
There is nothing wrong with it.
There's not. There's not a single thing wrong with
this game. There's not one bit in the game where you're like, well, that part was kind of, it's perfect.
It's perfect. All right, moving on. Game Boy Advance. This was an interesting category. Talk to me about your favorite Game Boy Advance game, Dan.
Yeah, this one was pretty hard. We talked last week about just how much I love the Game Boy Advance and the really awesome games that are out for that system. But, man, like, I wanted to cheat and put both of them on here, but the original Golden Sun is, not only do I think it is one of the best Game Boy Advance games, it's one of the best RPGs. Just this really incredibly nice-looking game that told a really cool story that had, you know, very cool characters and made a really good use of an RPG that was going to be played portably. It was broken up so nicely into little chunks that you could play through. The world that they created was very, very cool. Like, have you played the Golden Sun? I think we've talked about these. Have you played these before?
Not thoroughly. When I was on vacation once, I fired up the first one and I really got into it. I just never finished it.
Man, like there's
very cool look. Very
cool look. Like I said, the story is really cool. I mean, it's a typical RPG story, but you know, there's a little bit more to it going on. The battle system was really fun. The summon spells that you could power up your djinns as you went through, and you would have these big crazy fucking spells that would come in. It's a throwback kind of RPG. When things were going at this time, things had gone the Final Fantasy VII route of, like, everything is huge and just these big, epic, modern-looking, you know, flashy graphics and all this stuff. And this was a throwback. Like, I felt, playing through this game, I felt like I did when I played through, you know, Final Fantasy III on the Super Nintendo, which I just adored. There was character choice in here of, like, who you could take on your party and who you would recruit and things like that. This certainly needs it's a game that I wish you had played more of, because this is something that I would like to do a much longer segment on, because, like, the 5 minutes that we have per system is not nearly enough to talk about just how great of a game Golden Sun is. And its sequel. The DS one I didn't love as much. Still good. But nowhere near the charm that the first one had.
This game really needs to make a comeback in proper fashion.
It really does. Like, I would love to see this get something out on the Switch.
It would be awesome.
All about that. And then my runner-up was a game that I don't think a lot of people played, was Sigma Star Saga, which is another RPG on the Game Boy Advance. But what was cool about this one is that, unlike in traditional RPGs, when you encounter an enemy out in the world and you, you know, go into your battle screen or whatever, this one turned into a side-scrolling shooter.
Yeah, I remember this game.
Which is weird.
This is another one I didn't play much of.
But it's awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome.
Like, it's a very strange game. Not something that I could definitely be like, this is the game you have to play on the Game Boy Advance. Like, RPG favorite game, Golden Sun. But Sigma Star Saga, if you are looking for something different, this is a game for you. It looks great, first of all. It's a gorgeous-looking game. And the novelty of it, of, you know, these random battles going into shooter segments was just so cool. Like, this is a game, you know, we've talked plenty about how WayForward doesn't make bad games. They didn't make a bad game with this one either. Like, this is WayForward being original and awesome. So, definitely check this out.
Good choices. Mine, I guess, are a little bit more on the obvious side. Though this was a pretty tough coin toss to figure out which one I liked more. My runner-up would be Castlevania Harmony of Dissonance.
Which is just so good.
That's not true. It's not Harmony of Dissonance. It's Aria of Sorrow.
Also, I wrote just that wrong. So good.
Yeah. It is. It is just so good. Harmony of Dissonance, that was the one with just Belmont, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I think, yeah. And that was good. I liked that one a lot more than a lot of folks did. But no, Aria of Sorrow. Holy crap, yeah. Castlevania, Aria of Sorrow is incredible.
With Soma?
Yeah, that was the first one with Soma Cruz.
Yeah.
And that was the one that took place in the future. And I was just like, oh, future Castlevania?
But
what
it worked.
Are we doing here? Man, did it work. Man, did it work. What a great game. I do think Dawn of Sorrow was better, but that was on DS. So,
and we're not talking about the DS this week.
We are not. So, yeah, Harmony of Dissonance gets my runner-up because the Game Boy Advance was the place where Metroidvania type of Castlevania games went.
Mm-hmm.
And... so good. They were all great, and I feel they consistently got better, whereas I feel kind of the opposite on the DS ones, which is say they were all great, but I think that they went in the opposite, you know. I think a Dawn of Sorrow was the best, and then Portrait of Ruin was like, it was great, just not quite as good. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it as much. And then Order of Ecclesia, again, absolutely love that game, but I think it was actually, yeah, I'd say it was better than Portrait of Ruin, but still not as good as Dawn of Sorrow. But anyway, Aria of Sorrow for GBA, amazing game. The only thing that could top that would be Metroid itself. And that would be Metroid Zero Mission, which is one of the best remakes that anyone's ever made.
Such a good game.
Again, similar to the similar to what I mentioned about the Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap remake, except this one is more of a radical remake in the way that it more or less replaces the NES game by just being more playable. My brain is already losing it. Zero Mission's incredible. It takes aspects from Fusion and Super Metroid and then applies them to the world of the original Metroid and the story of the original Metroid, including an entire appendix added to the end, which is just freaking cool, where you go through these like kind of stealth missions and, you know, see Samus in her Zero suit, which is, you know, her fighting without her power suit on, which she's still badass, just, you know, not as physically strong because she's not wearing a crazy battle armor power suit. Yeah, Zero Mission's just a great game. It kind of reinforces the bone structure of the original NES Metroid, whereas like Samus Returns, for example, just completely reinvents the wheel for Metroid 2. Zero Mission just, I mean, the map is essentially the same as the NES game. It's just brought into a much bigger and brighter presentation. And they changed a lot of the gameplay. They changed the weight of Samus. It was just great. It was just great. Zero Mission's awesome.
All right, then.
All right, let's move on to the PlayStation. The original PlayStation, PS1, PSX, whatever you want to call it. This was fun because what was your favorite game?
Symphony of the Night.
Great game. Me too.
Which
this is the only one that we agreed on and the entire list. Yeah, this is the only one. But and, no, you're
not surprising.
You're right. Yeah.
Not surprising at all.
It's a freaking masterpiece. It looks so good.
It's not only my favorite game, and this was hard because obviously, I mean, Metal Gear Solid.
I was shocked that was not your runner-up.
That's just so obvious, you know. And I prefer 3. I mean, like, because I thought about it, and like, it's kind of the hard thing, right? Because at the time, it would have been a toss-up between Metal Gear Solid and Symphony of the Night. But I've since played Metal Gear Solid 3. And that, I think, is my favorite in the series.
Well, yeah, but I mean, so, that's not on PlayStation.
You're not wrong. But because I've played a game after that, it kind of knocks the original one down a little bit and allows something like my runner-up choice, Suikoden 2, to kind of get some love. Which, you know, if you can notice a theme here, around this time period, I was big into RPGs.
And, I see that.
And Suikoden 2 even takes a spot over Final Fantasy VII. Again, kind of an obvious choice for Final Fantasy VII, but there are, as great as that game is, there are a ton of flaws with that game. And it's mm-hmm. not fun to really go back and breed chocobos again and fucking get Knights of the Round. It's awful. That's a horrible thing to do. It sucks. It sucked then. It sucks even more now. You know, so something like Suikoden 2, which is this massive role-playing game where you, this crazy cast of characters that all somehow manage to be different enough and have their own personalities and contribute to the way that you want to build your teams. There's really like a play style within this world and within the trappings of an RPG. There really is a way to play for everybody based on the different characters you can recruit to join your army. I mean, I think you build up 108, I think was the number. That's sticking in my mind for some reason. I could be wrong.
God, I don't know.
But I've
never really messed with Suikoden before.
It's somewhere around, like, there's over 100 characters that you can recruit to your army, and you can put whoever you want in your team, and, like, off you go. So, just a really cool game with a really deep story, and, like, obviously there are a couple characters where it's like, oh, it's Joe. He could be in your party, and you're like, fuck Joe. Nobody likes Joe, right? Just like you, Bill, but not the Bills, not you, Bill, but you, Bill, you know,
the Buffalo Bills.
You know who I'm talking about. Yeah. Who really cares about the Buffalo Bills? Like, oh, we were so close, but you still lost. That sucks. yeah. So Suikoden 2 is just this really cool game that, you know, unfortunately at the time was also overshadowed by the Final Fantasy mania that had swept the PlayStation at that point.
That's true.
So, yeah, that was my runner-up.
Awesome. Well, I mean, Symphony of the Night, like I said, is also my favorite game on the platform. It wasn't even close. I mean, I thought about it for a few minutes. I looked through my list of PlayStation games, which is not a small number. I am at, where am I at on PlayStation games? I have 138 PlayStation games. So I went through them. And, like, you know, a couple of things popped out. Like, I love Frogger for PlayStation.
Sure.
And really a lot of those, like, old arcade reboot things that they did. But, you know, when it really comes down to it, like, it was just Symphony of the Night was just this completely seminal experience. And really, I'd have to mention Soul Blade because I spent so much time with that. You know, in games like Mega Man 8. I don't love that game, but I played a ton of it because it was at the time. Mortal Kombat Trilogy was so good, you know, minus the load times, which are friggin' ridiculous, like mid-fight load times.
Yeah, it was weird.
Come on now. But yeah, Symphony of the Night was really it, and it was, you know, I've gone on record many times as saying that I didn't like this generation very much because I hated 3D graphics at this time. Like, they were also ugly, and Symphony of the Night just had this incredible, gorgeous sprite work, which nobody was really doing at the time. You know, seeing how good a 2D game could be on a modern platform was just this complete dream come true. And so few people had done that, and so few people have done it as well as Symphony. It's just a brilliantly designed game. The whole upside down castle second quest so thing cool. going on there, all the callbacks to the old Castlevania lore, just wonderful. And no, my runner up was Metal Gear Solid, because it just has to be. I love Metal Gear Solid. I'll go back and play that. It's one of those PlayStation 1 games that owned its ugliness so well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we did a whole Metal Gear retrospective a while back, so you really want to go through my feelings on this. You can go back there. But I mean, Symphony of the Night was one of those things. Was like incredible to see Alucard from Castlevania 3 all done up in like modern crazy redesign. Like, I loved that. And Metal Gear Solid was taking one of my favorite NES games, Metal Gear, which, you know, I never played the MSX games before because I live in America. And, you know, just seeing that franchise reborn in such an incredible fashion. So much time and love spent in that game. Just completely blew my mind. And I fell off of the series because it kept getting crazier and stranger and more in depth and felt more like work to me to play. Like, really, Snake Eater was kind of where I fell out of it, because as awesome as that stuff was, I got so involved in the minutiae of like figuring out the constantly changing my camouflage
right.
to get from point A to point B. And like, that's kind of where it started to become more Gran Turismo and less F-Zero for me.
Yeah.
And I think the original Metal Gear Solid and even Twin Snakes for GameCube. But the original Metal Gear Solid is still my favorite in the series. It's, but, you know, Metal Gear Solid 2 is super cool, but I don't really like Raiden as a character. Metal Gear Solid was just this great, great follow-up to the original Metal Gear games, and was just such an amazing breath of fresh air into that franchise that had been dormant for so long. And it's just a freaking masterpiece. So Konami taking my top two spots on PlayStation.
No surprise. They were great at that time.
They were great at that time. They were great even before that. And now they're just sad.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to the other CD-based system from that generation, the 3DO. I'm just kidding.
Our favorite system of all time, if you listened last week. Spoilers.
What is your favorite 3DO / Philips CDI game? No. The other major player at that point that was CD-based would be the Sega Saturn. And I was really interested to see what your favorite Saturn games were, because I don't know how much experience you have with the Saturn.
Not a ton.
So what do you got for us, Dan?
Well, we had talked, and we have talked before, about how like companies like WayForward don't make bad games. And another company that does not make bad games, although they are not for everyone, is Treasure. Treasure makes some ridiculous nonsense. And both of my Saturn choices are Treasure games, because I didn't have a Saturn. I didn't have a ton of experience with the Saturn when it was out and popular. These were games that I went and played later because they were Treasure games. And I was like, all right, I want to check out the other stuff that this developer has done. My runner-up was Radiant Silvergun, which is an insane shooter, an insane shmup that they put out for a company that has put out quite a few insane shmups. Radiant Silvergun is up there with some of the most insane things that they've ever done. The amount of...
Was that one that got a release from... like did on Xbox Designs Live. Publish that?
Yeah, and it got an Xbox Live re-release years later. Like the Saturn Memories or something like that it was called.
Something like that. I don't have Radiant Silvergun, son of a bitch. I have a lot. I have a great Saturn collection. That's one of my favorite things that I have in my game collection, and Radiant Silvergun got past me.
It is not as crazy as Ikaruga, but you can kind of see how they got to Ikaruga after this. There's some DNA in there and some of the insane projectiles that are on the screen and whatnot. But my favorite game for the Saturn was Guardian Heroes, which was Treasure's take on the beat 'em up genre, which is a genre that I love dearly. This was a beat 'em up that was much deeper than, you know, Final Fight and Streets of Rage and whatnot. It was the natural evolution of that. And one of the things that Treasure does very, very well is they make games that look very cool and move very nicely. And Guardian Heroes is one of those games. The characters animate beautifully, like everything in the world when you're jumping back and forth to foreground and background. The way the characters fight, the different moves that you can pull off, everything looks really great. The game had some light RPG elements where you could, you know, buff some stats at the end of stages and stuff like that. But just a really, really fun beat 'em up that once you get into the rhythm of it, like it's one of the things about Treasure games. They all have a rhythm to them.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's so hard to quantify it. Like if you haven't played things that Treasure has done, it's kind of hard to be like, oh, the game has, like, because they're not rhythm games, but they all have a feel to them and a life to them that once you figure it out and are going with it, they become some of the most incredibly fun games to play. And Guardian Heroes is no different. There's a cool cast of characters. It's just a beat 'em up, but it's a damn good one.
It is, and it's got some really cool wrinkles in it. Like, you mentioned the whole jumping into the foreground and the background. So, like, when you think about your traditional beat-em-up, like a Final Fight or a Double Dragon or Streets of Rage, you have this kind of free 3D range of movement, you know?
Right.
Or even something like The Simpsons or Turtles in Time.
Right.
This one plays more like a straight side-scrolling, like just a flat 2D plane, except you can jump between, like, you actually literally jump between these different planes.
Right.
So there's like, you know, a foreground, a middle ground, and a background that you jump back and forth between. And it's it just adds such an interesting wrinkle to the gameplay where it's, you know, it's certainly not as realistic as something being able to just, you know, walk up and down, but it's it just adds a very interesting element to it. And this was one of those things that really took advantage of what the Saturn could do. This is such a good choice. This is such a good call. Because it, you know, the Saturn was really kind of built more around being a 2D game machine than a 3D
right.
Machine. And this just handles the sprites so well. You know, obviously it doesn't look as great now as it did back then,
oh,
but
sure.
The art direction is so solid that even when they get all pixelated and stuff, when they get all shrinky in the background, it still just looks great. How did you feel about the GBA, Advanced Guardian Heroes?
I liked it. I mean, you lose something when that really big, beautiful animation that you can get on your screen is shrunk down so much.
Agreed.
But I liked it. I like Gunstar Heroes, you know?
Yeah, that was another really good one on GBA.
I thought Gunstar Heroes was certainly better on GBA. That would have been number three on that list, right behind Sigma Star. But, yeah, very, very cool games.
Yeah, Guardian Heroes is fantastic. Really, really good choice. Good choices all around. Well done.
Thank you.
Very different from my choices, as a matter of fact.
I 100% knew what your first choice was going to be.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I guess, yeah, it had to be. It had to be. My number one choice was Panzer Dragoon 2's Y. I love Panzer Dragoon. I love this series very, very much. And the original one is a great game. Panzer Dragoon 2 is incredible.
It really is.
I love this genre of game. This kind of 3D shooter, like from a behind the back shooter, like Star Fox, like the certain stages in Kid Icarus Uprising. The Panzer Dragoon 2 is really just one of my favorite ones. I mean, you know, it's like, I guess if you haven't really messed around with these kinds of games, I think like Space Harrier, something like that,
mm-hmm.
or even something to the extent of like Afterburner. But so Panzer Dragoon is a game where, you know, it's you're behind the dragon and you're flying a dragon, and your dragon shoots lasers because it's awesome. And this one, there's this whole like system where the better you do, you can evolve your dragon, and it'll grow as you go through the game. It is stunningly gorgeous. It is really, really, really pretty game. Which is saying something, because again, this is, you know, Sega Saturn pushing polygons, but similar to the original Metal Gear Solid, it owns its limitations so well that it plays into its own art direction in a way where it winds up looking good even though it looks like crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And especially the way it handles some of the backgrounds, very similar to the way the original Star Fox on Super Nintendo handles some backgrounds, where you get these mm-hmm. just really, really great still images that are rotating with you and whatnot, that just kind of work as these like flat backgrounds that kind of scroll with things in a very intelligent way. But the other cool thing about Panzer Dragoon is that instead of just shooting forward, you have this kind of like full range of movement to shoot things that are beside you and behind you. You can tap the shoulder buttons to kind of swivel your camera around in these four basic directions, where you have this cone of vision. So like, you know, you'll be flying through a canyon and these creatures will be coming up behind you, and you just kind of, you know, flip your camera around behind you, and your dragon's handling the flying, and you're just shooting these monsters coming up from behind you. And you always got to pay attention to your radar to kind of tell where the enemies are coming from and whatnot. It's, the story doesn't make a ton of sense, but it's just got a really great...
To.
It doesn't need to, because it's very similar to like when you think about like 80s anime to a certain extent, like... It's that kind of storytelling where it doesn't give you a lot of information, but you can feel it. Just it evokes certain feelings, just the way the art direction works and the way the game's made up language works. Because I don't think it's in Japanese, if I'm remembering this correctly. It's actually like a made up language for the Panzer Dragoon universe. And Panzer Dragoon 1 is great. Panzer Dragoon Saga is also great. It is a really, really great game that I've never finished. Because it's always been a challenge for me to spend that much time with a Saturn, just because of, you know, how you know, the memory and internal memory and saving games and stuff on the Saturn, especially when the, you know, later in life, is not the easiest thing to deal with. And it's never been properly emulated, which is a goddamn Greek tragedy. But Panzer Dragoon 2 is perfect pick up and play. It is so impressive. It is a freaking masterpiece. It's so good. So, so good.
It is quite excellent.
My runner up is some of the most fun I've ever had with a Sega Saturn. It is the import version of X-Men versus Street Fighter.
Another arcade, phenomenal game.
Perfect. Oh, it's such a phenomenal game. And blows the PlayStation version out of the water, because the PlayStation version was gimped as hell because it just could not handle the arcade version of X-Men versus Street Fighter. But the Saturn could with this 4-meg cart. I went to Electronics Boutique and I bought this import copy of the game and an import cart. So the Sega Saturn, in case you're unfamiliar with it, has a cartridge slot in the back, and you would put this freeloader thing in the back of it that would pretty much just switch the region basically inside of your Saturn. And it would work great for like any other game. Any other game that you wanted to play a Japanese version of, you just put the disc in there, put your freeloader in, you're good to go.
Yep.
But X-Men versus Street Fighter came with this extra 4-meg cart that plugged into the cartridge slot so that the Saturn could be more powerful than it was. Kind of like the expansion pack for the N64, but like on more removable basis. So you had to do this crazy timing where you put in the freeloader thing, and then you have to swap the cart super fast at this one specific screen in order to get it to not like lose itself and load up X-Men versus Street Fighter. But when you got that right, holy crap, it was arcade perfect. And this was before Marvel vs. Capcom, you know, this was the first of the Capcom versus games, and it's so good. It was so much fun. It was the first time like Ryu would throw that the Shinku Hadouken, and it would just, instead of being like the Street Fighter Alpha one that just kind of like hit five or six times, or like even the Super Street Fighter 2 one, it was just this giant laser beam of death.
Awesome.
It was so freaking awesome. I spent so much time with this game. God damn, that was good. I love my Sega Saturn. I have so many good memories of that system. But yeah, X-Men versus Street Fighter and Panzer Dragoon 2 were just, they're the cream of the crop as far as I'm concerned. And as much as I love a lot of the other games, like I think Burning Rangers is a super awesome game that needs to be revisited. Even platformers like Bug or Clockwork Knight is just, there's really cool stuff. But man, Panzer Dragoon 2 is just one of the best 3D shooters of that variety, 3D scrolling shooters that anyone's ever made. Just freaking great. All right, here we are. Last category. The last one of the night. Oh, it's 10:30. I'm tired.
Well,
I'm losing it, man.
This isn't going to take too long because we have both talked about our choices quite a bit.
We have. And I almost feel bad landing on N64 to finish off, because I don't feel quite as passionate about this platform as some of the other things we did. But,
well,
you know,
but
here we are.
That's the way this works, you know, keeping the Stone Age in Stone Age Gamer to a
yeah,
point.
Yeah, we cut it off here. So here we are at the Nintendo 64. Dan, talk to me about Body Harvest.
Just for a system that did not have many great-looking games, man, Body Harvest is gorgeous. As good as Symphony of the Night.
Easily.
No. Runner-up game first, Conker's Bad Fur Day. We have talked.
I'm sorry. I can't let you go any further without expressing how serious we are that was sarcasm.
No.
Body Harvest is so goddamn ugly.
Nope. It's good. It's great.
Anyway, back to Conker. Conker's Bad Fur Day. Good choice.
Conker's Bad Fur Day. I love this game. It is just everything that Rare should be is in this game. It's just British and weird and a collectathon platformer that is cheeky. It's fucking great. We've talked about Conker quite a bit.
Yeah, a lot of the comedy still holds up. A lot of it is also dated.
Yeah,
but
whatever. I mean, there's a Clockwork Orange reference right at the beginning of the game. I'm in. Sold.
And this is totally better than Live and Reloaded.
Without question.
For Xbox, which is such a shame.
It really, really is. The less said about that, though.
How is the Xbox version more censored than a Nintendo 64 version? Whatever. Moving on.
Tipper Gore?
All right, sure.
I don't know. I mean, no, I mean, it wasn't her, but we can blame her because, you know, her name's Tipper.
Ugh. Anyway.
Anyway, so my number one favorite game on it's this one I did cheat, and I lumped all of the WWF wrestling games on N64 into one category because while they did improve upon themselves, they are all still awesome. And some of the most fun you can have playing video games with other people. I've written about them. We have talked about them.
You mean specifically, though, the THQ ones, right? Because didn't Attitude get an N64 release as well?
Those don't count. And when people say WWF games on N64, we are talking about the Aki and THQ No Mercy WrestleMania 2000. That's where we are. Those are the games that are just...
Does that also include WCW, NWO, Revenge, and World Tour?
Yeah. I mean, sure. I like the WWF games better.
Okay.
Just because I like the wrestlers better at the time. You know, I mean, you do get to be Hogan in the other ones and Diamond Dallas Page and the Diamond Cutter is awesome. But, I mean, these games are just so much fucking fun. They're still the best wrestling games outside of Fire Pro. But it's kind of a different animal. I mean, Fire Pro is its own thing. Just people who don't like wrestling, who hate wrestling, will have fun playing these games. And that is about the highest praise you can give a wrestling game.
It's true. I have played these games. I do not like wrestling. I like these games. They are fun.
It's just fun.
And it's just these, because I also tried the SmackDown games.
Nope,
and
nowhere near as fun.
Did not have any fun with those.
Nope, they're like, good.
Just not at all.
But it is a different thing entirely. This set of games that came out for the 64 were special. They were just great. Just great.
Yeah, they just felt right. Mm-hmm. They were spot on and very fun.
That's it. That's all I got on this. We've talked so much about 64. Plus, and, you know, like you said, it's not our favorite thing. So.
Nah, it's really not. I don't hate on the N64. The N64 was like, it's such a weird system, and we've talked about it to no end. But it is not something that I dislike. It's just something that a lot of things about it I don't like. So, I mean, my top choices were very different from yours. Mm-hmm. My number one choice would just kind of have to, by default, be Ocarina of Time.
Right.
Because as much as I kind of rag on the game a bit nowadays, because going back to it isn't as easy as it once was, mm-hmm. especially now that the 3DS version exists, which cleans up a lot of the issues in Ocarina of Time, there is no getting around the fact that Ocarina of Time was just an incredible game, especially at the time. Just thinking about this period of time when we got Metal Gear Solid and Ocarina of Time in such close proximity to one another, it's just incredible. Just incredible. Because they're two of the best games of their generation. Ocarina stands as my favorite on the platform just because, you know, just the nostalgia surrounding it. And how much fun it is to go back and do the things that you can do in it. And you know, it's just experiencing the Hyrule in 3D for the first time. And you know, while Hyrule Field, like, it seems like this empty shell now, especially after Breath of the Wild, there's no getting around at the time. It was just amazing seeing that sunset. And
there was something special to it.
Yeah, there really is something special to it. And again, like Panzer Dragoon 2 and Metal Gear Solid, Ocarina of Time owned its art style. Mm-hmm. It was like, this is what we can get away with, so we're going to work within those limitations
right.
and not
How
try
do
to
we
do
make
anything.
This work?
Exactly. And there are things about Ocarina of Time that Ocarina of Time needs to be remade, like similar to how Metal Gear Solid was remade with Twin Snakes. It needs a full remake. Like, Ocarina of Time 3D was not enough.
No, it needs the Shadow of the Colossus treatment.
It does. Exactly right. It needs the Shadow of the Colossus treatment, because there's things in Ocarina of Time that just stick out like a sore thumb. You know, like Ganondorf is such an awesome interesting character in that, but the writing for Ganondorf is kind of terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially when you compare him to Wind Waker, you know, there's a point in N64 Ocarina of Time where Ganondorf says you want a piece of me. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
no.
That's just so silly.
That's not, it doesn't make sense in the way people talk in Hyrule. Like, that's just not how this works.
No.
It's a bad line. And, but the skeletal structure of this game, the dungeon layouts are so interesting and so smart and so good. And like, you know, Ocarina of Time 3D, like this music is incredible, but it still sounds like an N64.
Right.
And that's
which
not
is
a great
problem.
Sound. It is a problem. It works here in Ocarina. It does. It's one of those games that just transcends the limitations of the platform, which, you know, similar to Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap with the Master System. I don't love a lot of what the N64 does. And something like this or something like Super Mario 64, they do what the system shouldn't. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it's what the system should instead of what it actually does. You know, a lot of people love Majora's Mask on N64. I just don't because I think it's hideous. It's just hideous. And that's a game can be super fun and super smart and super clever. But if it is that ugly to me, mm-hmm. I'm going to have a hard time getting into it. And Ocarina, I think, doesn't have that problem because it leaned into, you know, those that crazy thing like in Hyrule Castle Town. When you walk around, and it's just like one flat image that is kind of like stretched in this weird way so that when you move the camera around, the whole area moves and it looks so cool. And it looks better than an N64 can do because they're just putting these polygons on top of it, similar to like Resident Evil. And it was such a smart way of handling that. It was just a smart game. Ocarina is amazing. My runners up was, this was the one tie that I put because I really couldn't choose which one I liked better. And these were almost my picks for top N64 game, but at the end of the day, I really just had to go with Ocarina. But, my runner up tie is New Tetris and Dr. Mario 64,
mm-hmm.
Because Tetris and Dr. Mario are two of my favorite falling block puzzles, and these are two of my favorite versions of these games. Tetris DS eventually superseded this as my favorite version of Tetris, but for a long time, this was my absolute favorite Tetris. And this is still my favorite Dr. Mario, because the Dr. Mario games, I feel, have gotten progressively less feature intense and less, I guess, cared for, where Dr. Mario 64 has this whole story mode, hand-drawn sprites, with great animation, a four-player mode, which is awesome. And that's the thing about both of these games, had four-player modes built in, and they're so good. They're so good. These games are both really incredible. It's weird to think of the N64 as like this great puzzle game machine, but it really was.
It really was.
New Tetris and Dr. Mario 64 in particular are just great falling block puzzles. Some of the best in their respective genres. So there you have it. There we have it. Those are our favorite games. On all those different platforms. Dan, what's your favorite game of all time?
Man, fucking, I knew you were going to do this shit at the end. I don't have one. I can't. Fuck Guacamelee.
There you go. All right.
You?
And, Wind Waker. Still, nothing has topped it yet. As much as I loved Breath of the Wild, Wind Waker still has that sense of adventure in the story that Breath of the Wild does not have. So, yeah, still Wind Waker, particularly Wind Waker HD. It's just masterpiece.
Ask me next week after I've started playing the new God of War. I bet you my answer is going to be different.
That's going to be your portal, too. You know, what's mm-hmm. your favorite Super Nintendo game? God of War for PS4.
God of War on PS4 is my favorite Game Boy game.
Hands down.
Without question.
Well, this was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah, this was fun. It went well. It went long, just as I expected. I'm really tired. So let's call it. It's done. Episode over. That's our show. Join us next week. 198. We're almost there. Next week for 199, Dan and I are going to be doing our April 10, 2030, featuring games like Double Dragon for the NES, Panzer Dragoon Saga for the Saturn, and Grand Theft Auto 4, and more. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@keycade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade K-R-I-S. And Dan, where can people find you?
At Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks and for sleeping through the first half of the show, which he messaged me in the middle of to tell me about. And also, we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Once again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. That is it, everybody. We're marching up on 200 episodes, which is absolutely insane. We've been at this for a long time, but I'm having a blast. So that's it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.